Hello again. Well, it's good to be back up here. Just, you know, 15-minute break or whatever it was. So, you know, I was getting ready to figure out what I was going to talk about tonight. There was a lot of different options, and I think that's one of the great things about being somebody that speaks about God's word is that there's always plenty of options. The difficulty is in figuring out what to talk about. It's figuring out what one thing can I talk about tonight or that day or whatever it is. So for any of you that haven't really gotten a chance to talk to me yet, just to kind of let you know a few things about myself and Abby, I went to college, went thinking I was going to be a graphic designer, realized I was terrible at it, so went and answered God's call for me to be a youth minister, got to college, left for a little while, came back, met up with Abby in 2009, found out she was a graphic designer and had a passion for youth work, and I thought, this is perfect. We dated for a couple years, got married in July of 2011. Got married in July of 2011, and then 2015, we had our first kiddo, Hannah Beth. She wasn't able to be here this weekend because she's 13 months and doesn't do well being in a hotel room, or at least she might do okay with it, but mom and dad don't do so well with the sleeping arrangement. So, so she's staying in Oklahoma City with one of her aunts and uncles and enjoying swim time and such, and is probably going to be spoiled rotten by the time we get back, so. Being a youth minister and such, one of the things that you hear all the time is the comment of, oh, the youth are the future of the church. The youth are the future of the church. And it's always something that just kind of drives me a little bit crazy hearing that comment, because I sit there and think to myself, well, they're the present of the church too, aren't they? And they are here with us today, aren't they? So I always get a little bit bothered by that idea of saying they're the future of the church, because I think what we do is when we do that, we're teaching our students, you're just kind of here for right now. You're playing the church role, but you'll eventually get there down the line. And we don't set a time frame of when that line is. And so I think we just kind of leave this generic confusion out there for our kids. And so one thing that I learned through my experience between graduating from OC with my degree in youth ministry and actually beginning youth work was that our students need to know how to live out, need to know how to live out their faith in high school and beyond. And they need to understand that they are not just the church of the future, but they are church today, tomorrow, and ongoing. I think when we do that, when we say that the idea that our children are the future of the church, we get kind of around the idea that God expected of us for our families. When we go into Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9, Moses is kind of getting ready to recommission the Israelites. They've wandered in the desert for 40 years. The adults that were part of the decision to try and revolt against Moses when the spies came back are all now dead and gone, and Moses is kind of recommissioning the people and saying, remember the laws, remember all the stuff that has happened, and take that with you into the promised land. And he begins in chapter 6, and he says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. I think a lot of times those of us in the youth ministry field like to refer back to this because it's almost like a direct confirmation of what we do, the idea of working with students and so forth. But I think more importantly, it's not just about, well, tell kids the stories. Tell them the information. I think what we see in verse 7 in particular is the idea that it's more than that. It's impressing the heart of God onto their hearts. That's this process of helping our youth make their faith theirs and not just something that's simply passed to them and said, here. It's a process of helping them learn and grapple with it and struggle with it and forming their heart and figuring out how God's heart fits into their heart. And so as we go throughout that process, I think in doing so, we help them learn how to put to death the fleshly nature, because whenever something occurs in this world, we always have a fleshly response that we want to do. But if we go about this process of talking to them about faith along the road, then we're not just sitting there telling them a Bible story. We're telling them, this is the Bible story. This is the concept behind that story. This is how we live that story out day to day. And as we do that, what we do is we help our students learn how to move throughout the rest of their lives in faith. They learn how to see the fleshly response that their body wants to have in response to things and say, I want to do that. But the godly nature within me says no. The godly nature within me that my parents, that my church, and everybody that's gone before me has taught me has said, no, that's not God's heart, and I want to copy His heart. I think we see examples in the Bible of what happens when we don't pass along the faith to our children. And it's really, really sad because in the story of Judges, it becomes very clear what happens very quickly, because it's just so disappointing. The people finally get into the promised land. Joshua has taken them through this whole process. And then in chapter 2, we just see it all just go so horribly wrong. Starting in verse 6, it says, after Joshua had dismissed the Israelites, they went to take possession of the land, each to his own inheritance. The people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had seen all the great things the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gash. After that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. How sad is it that the Israelites rebelled against God, were punished for that, and had to wander for 40 years in a desert because they decided not to take up God's command to go into the promised land? How sad is it that they spent 40 years raising up their children to sit there and understand who God was, what He had done for them, and what He was leading them into, and pass that along to their children? How sad is it that that generation then went along knowing that? They went into the promised land. They took over the land, but neglected to share that with their children. And as a result, we see this vicious cycle through Judges where the generation rebels against God. They follow the Baals and all these other different gods of the land. God decides to let them be punished for their sins. And they fall into such terrible, terrible circumstances. And eventually, yes, they come back and they say, God, rescue us from this. And God comes in and sends a judge and rescues them. But it's a pattern that we see where it was not passed along in the first place. And it's a horrible result because of it. I think if we focus ourselves too much on passing along the information without God's heart, we also face a certain danger with our teen, with our youth. In Matthew chapter 22, we see this challenge to Jesus. The Pharisees come up to him and they say, well, who should we pay taxes to? To Caesar? And of course they're trying to trap him, because they know that if Jesus was to say Caesar, then that would cause a lot of Jews to get really upset. But Jesus points out exactly what it is. The Sadducees come up and they try and challenge him as well. And I think what we see with the biblical Pharisees and Sadducees and teachers of the law is this idea of a people that had become so focused on the law that they forgot the intent. They forgot the heart behind the law. And it's a problem that I think we have to be willing to address, that we have to be able and willing to do more than simply tell our kids, remember these stories. Remember these facts. And yeah, when it comes to younger children, that's fine because we have to build up a foundation first. But eventually we have to move beyond that. We have to be able to help our youth understand this is what God is trying to say. This is how you apply that. This is how you live that out. And this is how you go day to day living in God's way. I think what we see as the goal is a little bit after that interaction in Matthew 22. When they come up to him and they say, what's the greatest command? And Jesus responds with, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and prophets hang on these two commandments. I love the way that this is told in Mark. Because in Mark, what we see is that this one teacher has been watching this interaction between Jesus and the Pharisees and then Jesus and the Sadducees. And he's intrigued by this. And so he asks Jesus this question. And Jesus gives this response. And in that story, the teacher responds, well said, teacher. And he acknowledges about why that's good. That every other commandment rests on those two. The idea that if you love God, you're going to seek him. You're going to try and be like him. You're going to try and mimic him. You're going to try and make him happy. And that you're going to love others. You're going to serve them. You're going to take care of them. You're going to bind up their wounds. You're going to encourage them. Everything else rests on that. And so I loved it because it's as if this teacher has not only learned the law, he's learned the intent behind the law. I think that's the thing that we have to make sure we do with our children as we go throughout this process, is making sure that we don't just give facts, that we actually help them take it in as their own, that we impress these things on them as we go along. That as we drive down the street or we're going through a baseball game or whatever, you know, event your kids might be in, that we're helping them understand this is how Christ is reflected in these events. This is how Christ is reflected at school or at work. And for sometimes this is how Christ is reflected as we're driving down the road and trying to avoid the crazy people. That's something I personally have to work on each and every day. Youth aren't the future of the church. They are the church here and now. We have to make sure that as we're going through this process with our youth, that we're not simply showing them what God's word is, but what it means in everyday life. We have to make sure that we show our students more than simply going on a mission trip, but how to serve God's redemptive plan in their communities, both now and in the future. We have to show our students more than simply teaching a lesson every so often or praying or serving communion, but learning the gifts God has given them to serve in His church. Maybe for some people that means maintenance. Maybe for some people that means administrative. Maybe for some people, I don't know. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes in any church. There are people that help handle the books and make sure that everything goes good financially. There are people that help make sure that everything looks good and clean for this. There are people that handle the AV equipment And we have to make sure that all of our youth understand that God has gifted them in a certain way. Let's help them understand that and help them learn how to apply that throughout everyday life. We have to make sure that as we're going through this process, we make sure to educate our youth so that they see themselves as a part of this church right now. So I have a couple challenges for you all. Parents, be sure to raise your children to love God and not simply know Him. Loving God will inspire them to obey and apply God's heart to everyday life. Students, I'm challenging you to actively pursue your faith. Don't wait for somebody to sit there and come up to you. Pursue it yourself. And go out there, find these people that have gone before you. Find out from them about what it means to live this life. Learn from them. There's tons of experience within this room. Not just experience of understanding the words that are there, but how they've lived that life. The opportunities that they've had, whether it be children or the lack thereof or the loss thereof. Going through marriages and getting through marriages where you're going through the process and you're arguing, you're debating, you're discussing, however you want to word that, or you're bickering, or that you're getting through that. Actively pursue that so you can learn how to grow in your faith. Adults, some of you all may not have youth in this church right now, but you're not off the hook either. And that was one thing that I really appreciated this morning in the opening prayer was the acknowledgement that the adults need to reach into the lives of the teens just as the teens and the youth need to reach into the lives of the adults. Your role is to impress on their hearts God's heart and to be willing to let your hearts be impressed by them. I think that's something that we often forget is the idea that we can still learn from them as well. I can tell you that working with teens, sometimes they surprise you. And sometimes they will sit there and bring up something that you had never thought of or a way to apply that that you might not have considered. Be willing to let your hearts be impressed upon by them as well. If you're not yet at that point tonight where you've accepted Christ, you might have listened to this lesson and thought, well, there's nothing here for me. I can just move along. But I want you to know this, that if you're here tonight, you're here because someone loves you. Now, if maybe you're a youth and your parents have brought you into this, they brought you because they love you and they want you to know God's heart. And they want you to grow in God's heart. And they want you to be a part of God's kingdom. If someone invited you here, then they love you enough to help you hear about God's love for you and desire to take you in. And if you're here on your own, God loves you. And I will wager a guess and be willing to bet that this church loves you too. They just don't know it yet. Because they're still learning you, or they haven't met you yet. God is holy and wants to be with you. But in order to be with God, we must be made holy through Christ's blood. And if you're still in that point where you're trying to decide whether or not you're going to make that commitment, you might be thinking, I've not done anything bad yet. I've heard that comment all the time when I'm trying to talk with people and share with people about Christ and the separation that exists between us because of sin. And my response has become this, is that it's not a question about whether you're good or bad. It's a question of whether you're holy or unholy. And we have to remember that. If you're here tonight and you haven't accepted Christ, are you willing to be made clean? Are you willing to be made holy so that you can approach God, to live with Him, be restored to Him, and so you can share that love with others as well? If you are a member of Christ's body here tonight and you want to be encouraged by your brothers and sisters to pass on that faith, if you're here tonight and you want to be committed in that way, then I ask that you continue that conversation. I can tell you from the short time that I've been here that Ben and the elders are wonderful people that would love the opportunity to talk with you and to speak with you about that, about how to grow and how to do that. The answer might not always be simple. I don't think the good answers are. I think the good answers take time to struggle with and get creative with. But I think that's how our church is going to grow, by taking what God has commanded us and figuring out how to apply that in each and every day, and by sharing that with our students, our youth, as we go through that process, and not leaving them out of it, but making sure that they are an active part in it. I want to thank you guys again for bringing me out here. It's been an absolute pleasure to get to know you all and to speak with you and to share these thoughts and such with you. Thanks.